We're not only in functional programming. So let's check the agenda for the day. Let's see, where are we currently? We covered monoids and functors and all kinds of weird functors. Then we did applicatives. Applicatives are usually the first actually difficult part in this course. They are really not that difficult, but they are different, so it takes time to absorb them. And then we had this functional programming fanatic's favorite word today. We have monads. And this is a really funny term in Haskell programming. Monads, like applicatives, they are not at all difficult. They, however, require that if you want to understand what a monad is, you have to be able to read Haskell types. And functional programming one, you started out learning Haskell and how to read Haskell types, and it wasn't easy at all. So we have a hard prerequisite to learn monad. And since people try to learn monads without understanding Haskell type system, they feel that monads are really hard. And so like a gazillion of different monad tutorials, then you can put your favorite language. Monads in JavaScript. Yeah, like that's a thing that you ever would want to do. Don't, but still there it is. What else? C#. Yeah, you can have monads explaining C#. And anyways, this whole concept of monads has turned into this difficult and crystallized difficulties that people have with functional programming. Usually if you want to go to the industry and start telling them that you like to work in Haskell, they will start telling you immediately that they can't do Haskell because monads are so difficult and hard to use and they can't understand monads. So this is kind of like a pinnacle of functional programming arguments that is going. And it's a bit sad because monads are an easy concept with a really strange name. And it's like, very useful, very general purpose thing you can use for pretty much any program in very different constructions. And since it's so abstract, like all the things that we have covered here, it's hard to understand based on just simple one-off examples. So I can show you that IO, that's a monad. It works like this. I can show you that all the applicative functors that we have are actually monads and they work like this. And it's like I can show you a zillion examples. Like concurrency is modeled as a monad by terminal IO is monad. Any futures or what do they call them now? If you do callbacks, why you can get rid of all callbacks using monads and things like this. Monads are applicable almost everywhere, and none of these examples by themselves really tell what the monad is. Whereas actually this very short type signature tells you all that you need to know about this concept. Then it's just applying it, this abstract concept, everywhere. And my plan for teaching monads is to first point out this article, Knighthood of Infinity, you could have invented monads. This is only monad tutorial, I think, which is worth reading.
Can you link this somewhere?
I promised to add links for all the topics that we have covered, so I will put this one somewhere. But if you can't make any sense of my English, then you can just pick up your laptop and start reading that instead. So, my idea of teaching this, go and look that. That's the second opinion you want on monads. It's a bit differently worded, might help clear things up. And I'm going to show them in two ways. Like I did with the applicatives, this might be slightly confusing. You remember that we did this JIP-A thing, which is not standard Haskell. It's applicatives, but in a different way. So we are going to do monads in two different ways. We have one way that is in sense a bit simpler than the other, and the other one which is a bit to use Cambia one. So we do either of these today. I'm first going to motivate the need of monads by taking the applicative functors examples and adding some requirements to those examples that make them impossible to express through use of applicative functors. And then we recode them, you know, manually. We again do the random die rolling thing manually and see, you know, what it's going to look like, and then abstract out the monad pattern. Okay, this clear, and the plan of attack is clear, I guess. And depending on whether I'm awake enough, we are going to end up here. And if I fall asleep during this, then we're going to end up here. Doesn't matter, we are anyway going to cover both. So there was one request by Samson that he said that there was some difficulty. Namely, he said that it wasn't very clear for all who participated in supervised systems why the chip A structure and the applicative functor are the same, why they are equivalent for isomorphic even. So let's take a quick look at that. So, starting with, this is the same thing that we are going to do with monads. So, with monads, we are going to have two different ways of making running monads. So, chip A, this is what I defined. And this is what the standard library defines. And my claim is that if F is a functor, it doesn't matter which instance you have for your data type, because these are isomorphic instances. If you give me Z unit and Z, I can use those to define pure and star. And if you give me star and pure, I can define Z and Z unit. Okay, this is my claim. This is why I can teach this. It allows me to show you simpler laws. It's more intuitive in my mind. And this is a bit of a monster. Of course, you know, you can always try to draw this kind of analog. So it's kind of like F-map, which, you know, this type of thing. So, noticing that these are pretty similar, I have no idea how that actually helps you understand this stuff. They are. So, at this point, those of you who are actually present here and are at the other end of the camera, is it obvious to you how these two things are the same thing? Is it obvious? Okay, how would I go and demonstrate that these are obvious? If I want obviously the same. So, to demonstrate that these things are actual, it's the same thing, I can take one and implement the other on top using the operations of other. I have to put this in comments. Otherwise, since, you know, applicatives are defined in base, it's going to complain. Then let's hook up. It's automatically compiling the ingredients and the complaints. So let's do first implement Z unit and Z using the applicative interface. So we have Z unit 1, just to give it a new name so I don't clash with anything. using the constraint adjective, I can add so how can I make how can I do if I know that I have f is an applicative, I don't know what it is, how can I make this value? How can I get f? Well, I can use pure. X any a makes me an f of a. So if it type checks its a, it type checks. So pure, I can make this f unit, f containing nothing, easily. And then g. So if I can make implement this function in a sensible way, then I have shown that, you know, applicative implies zip type class. So I have FA and FB, and I need to get FA and B. So how do I start cracking this? Well, obviously I have in always when I use applicative functors, it's going to look like this. I have some function that I shuffle inside the f, and then I start passing parameters to that function using the star operator, which wiggles this a out and puts it inside the f containing the function. Does this thing. So here is a pure function shuffled inside the container f, and then I pick up this another applicative, extract the a, somehow shuffle it inside. As a first argument, this function, then take fb, get the b somehow and shuffle it inside this pure here and the function that is hanging out there. So what is the function that I have to write there? Let's put a hole there, underscore, and it tells me I have to do this. If I have A and B, and I have to return pair of A and B. Well, no, let's see. Now I have, you know, C defined based on the aggregate operator. Okay, any questions? This is how you do it. Just simple programming exercise. Now, next question. Are you 80% sure that you could do the other way around, assuming G make the other way operators? Are you 80% sure that you could do it? Raise hands if you are. Okay, less than half. Less than half. So, let's demonstrate. So, goals first. Pure one. Chip A, F, and I need, you know, make a function like this. Okay. So I get an A, let's call my A X, and I need to make an F A. So where can I get an F? Well, I have these two functions that I can use. Only these two makes the problem very simple. And chip, to call chip I need to have a, so I can't use that. To call z unit, I get an f, I don't have to give it any arguments. So I have z unit, that's what my starting point, and let's put underscore there and ask the compiler what do I have to do with my z unit. And yeah. Okay, here the whole explanation is a bit difficult. It says that I have F0 unit, and I have to convert it to A. Because it doesn't actually know that this Z unit has to have the same F. So, I will show you how to fix this kind of error, because you might need it at some point. But it's not really related to this exercise at hand. So I can solve it by first quantifying the F and A. So this is syntax that says that, okay, for all F A, it's part of an extension for type variables, which means that when I do this thing, say for all f and a, I'm basically declaring these variables f and a so that I can use the same f and a in any type that I write in the body of this function. So basically it just says that if I put type f here, it's going to be this f above. Nothing mysterious about this, just purpose syntax that allows me to. So it allows me to tell that this z unit is supposed to be returning this f to me. And I did this because I want a clear error, you know, error message here. And so what do I have? I need to write a function from after the f unit to fa. And what do I have? I know that this f is chip a, thus the f is also a functor, because chip a implies being a functor. And then what I have is I have x, which is an a. So I have to go inside this f unit and change this unit into an a. Right. So how do I do this? Well, fmap. Every time I need to, you know, operate inside some f, that is a functor, I use fmap. And now I need a function from unit to a. Well, gee, that's pretty cool. No. Foo is a unit. I don't have to give it a name. Just constant x. Fmap, change all the elements in the container into x. That's fine. Okay. Here's my cure. Is this okay? Yes.
I don't see how the Z unit doesn't have any parameters, but here does, and still that somehow does more.
Okay, let me check if I understood what the problem is. So are you confused about this part?
No, the beginning of the row that says pure one X.
Yeah.
So it takes one parameter, right?
Yeah.
But unit doesn't.
Yeah, this Z unit, yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah, so how are they asking? How do they do the same thing?
The confusion is probably Z unit and pure don't do the same thing.
Oh.
If I have, you know, Z unit and two, I can do all the things that I can do with pure and star. And if I have pure and star, I can do all the things that I can do with Z and G.
Oh, okay.
So these things together are equally powerful as these things together. If F is a functor, because I need this constraint that F is a functor, because I use fmap here, it has to be a functor. Whereas from applicative CK, I don't need to use fmap at all. Okay, this is cool. Then let's do the final one. Star one using chip A. Again, let's do this. It's not that difficult. The structure is always the same. F of A is the function containing the F containing the function, F containing the argument to the function, and then I need to do something. I need to return the FP. And what can I do? Well, there's always this pattern using this chip. So first, chip together FF and FX, So I get, what do I get? Probably something that needs some editing. So tipping this and this together lets me apply its f containing a function and the argument for the function, and I need to tell it f containing the result of the function. So I tip things together, and then of course, whenever I have some f containing something I want to change the thing inside, I just add my little. And now I have pair, a function, and the argument of the function. I write a function that takes this pair and calls the function. And I'm all done. Okay, clear enough. Might need a bit meditating, but should be clear enough. And I spend, 20 minutes about from my monad time to do this. So any questions about this? Let's not make this a totally useless exercise. Is it clear now why these first functions are equivalent in power? Notice that I need to use fmap to go the other way around. So it's, if you have just zip a without the constraint function, they are not equivalent. That's about different applications. So then, let's make few. Lots of useless. Let's start with that. Empty file is better. So, goal. Let's figure out few problems that seem like they would be good match for the applicable interface, but which actually are not. So, do you remember this, where is it? Yeah, this is a random functor. A functor that is useful for combining stuff that produce random numbers. This has been our go-to example for many times. So, let's see this. So, this allows me to easily simulate die rolls. And it allows me to simulate them so that let's pick up the all the necessary bits and pieces or let's also see the gamer example. For example, we have this simple program that picks up three random numbers, then combines the random numbers with this complex business logic or arranging them from largest to smallest. And when we did this for the first time, we had to write enormous amount of boilerplate code because random number generators work in this fashion. That you generate one random number, you get the random number and seed for the next random number generator. So you have to track the state of the random number generator throughout the computation. And we could hide this threading and this bookkeeping inside the instance of this GPA. So we write this bookkeeping code only once. Make sure that we use each random number generator seed exactly once, and all these things.
and this was nice.
And one hope that this is enough to model all kinds of random programs. So let's take as an example one. Dies until you get to 6 and print out a sum. It might appear in some dice game, for example. So, can we do this using applicatives? Turns out that we can. Second problem. Let's have these compute function. So this compute function, you had expressions modeled as a data type. For example, you could have something like 1 plus 1 times 2 modeled as a data type. And then we had this compute function that both computed the result of this expression and made a log of the computations that you had to perform. And we found out that we got into a slight difficulty with this. So we have this neat bit of code here that just, you know, is amounts to shuffling an applicative code inside this simple recursive definition. So you first, you know, chip together computation of the sub-expression A and sub-expression B, and then you, you know, take these results and sum them together. And finally you add this annotation that we did some. And you of course notice that, you know, we in this function we compute this A and B, we compute them twice. For some reason we compute them twice and we have to extract this W thingy, which is the result container. Then we use the second computation to build up this explanation. And not only does this give a slightly wrong result compared to the thing that we originally had, we are computing things twice. So another example would be so things get computed only once. Alright, both reasonable requests, I guess. So, let's try the first one. Let's try to do the first one. So, roll dice until you get a 6. Implement this kind of a function? Well, probably I have to roll a die first, then do something with the roll of the die. And might be nicer to use proper comments. So let's make it simple. Let's roll one die and return a sum. So let's wrap the result into this. Okay, here is one nice roll. You can even give it a name. So first roll. Well, yeah. Well, Then what do? I have to roll a second die. First thing is I have to do something like this. The first roll is let's dispense with this knowledge stuff, you know, makes things unnecessary over here. So I have to write something like this. Right, this is the essence of my problem. So what should I write here? Because I cannot actually do this if statement. This is this thing here. It's a random int. It's not an int, because this whole random computation, that thing, that's a function that I call with some seed value. I call some function with a seed value, but then it generates me an a. So I can't do that. This thing is not a number. Its computation will produce a number. So, best that I can get is I can just run the random number generator, check if it gives me this kind of result. But now I have broken everything, because next row I have to thread the new seed again. So I can't actually explicitly use the seed, because then the next die roll won't know the proper seed. Only if I do it like this, I have to explicitly write out what I so neatly wrote once in this seed handling business away from my actual business logic. But here, the alternative seems to be that I have to actually execute the random number generator to figure out what I'm going to do next. So it's not going to work. So can do it like this. This would be step backwards. Then how about doing this old-fashioned trick, this edna with something zip die, first thing that you first roll and what do I zip it with? Of course the idea is that I can do this normal recursive split, like processing lists. I first roll the first die and then I roll the rest of the die. So I would write you something like this. Probably easier to write it without any let statements even. You understand this idea. The whole idea. I first roll one die, then I roll until I get six, and then I have one roll and the rest of the rolls and the sum then. Understood the idea, general. Again, now. Oh, yeah. I still insist on using C. So, yeah, seems promising. Now I have to implement this kind of function text to the XML terms and in. Awesome. And everything is nice. Have to unhurry it. And still missing stuff from the previous file. Probably should have continued using that file. Okay, so what's my problem now? Why doesn't this work? Why does it do nothing like my task? Well, this would be something I want to write. But now I'm missing this crucial point. I have to stop when I'm rolling a 6. This is infinite recursion. It rolls dice and sums them until it runs out of memory in the computer. And not very useful program. So okay, can't write plus here. Yeah? So the second attempt fails as well. So what can I write here? Yeah? If I use this basic pattern of how to use applicable functors, only thing I can use is, you know, something that takes pair of dice rolls and returns me an int. It is impossible for me to write any function here that would tell this chip not to chip this one. So this already has decided that it has to roll more dice. Has to roll more dice. Has to roll even more dice. So, no. Can't tell this chip to perform this thing conditionally. There's no way of saying chip, but only if the first thing is something else. So yeah, have I convinced you that it's actually impossible to use the applicative interface to express this problem? No, kind of. Of course, you can express it if you just, you know, open up this random data type and thread to generate a state by yourself and basically cheat by, you know, writing everything in the low-level code and then rewrap it inside this random. But using this fmap and cheat, no, can do it. Can make this work. Okay, similar thing with the computer. What does this have that is similar to this computer that is giving me was giving me problems before? All of these computations depend on the value of the computation. The continuation of the computation depends on the value you compute first. So basically, this plus here, it also has the same structure. So I'm trying to build up this nice, let's read the things so we can see them completely. This nice structure that I have this plus annotated with some explanation. Now this explanation, this thing here, it requires the results from these two compute functions. And depending on those results, it adds one thing or another to the log of this computation. So that depends on the result of being computed in the chip. And there are many programs that have this exact same structure. Read a network package until you get end package. Or read lines from the user until he says quit. If the user says this thing, then do that. If he says that, then do that other thing. And none of these are expressible using applicatives. Applicatives, you have this, you know, you chip together the pieces that you want to combine, and then you combine them in the way that you want. But you can't actually tell that, you know, chip these pieces if this thing holds, and chip these pieces if the first computation says. Like this. So we need something else. We need a different strategy. We need something that does something similar but allows us more expressive power. Allows our first computation to depend on the first computation to decide what the next computations are. Or allow the rest of the computations to depend on the thing that we did first. Okay, so another way of visualizing this problem is that we have this U notation. Oh, we really don't know what U notation actually is yet, but we know enough to use them. Yeah, simple problem, you know what this does. Okay, this I can express using applicable functors very easily. Or I can put plus there. Very easy to express using applicable functors. Basically, I can have more of these commands. I can write more nested chips, and if I use the real objective interface, I can just use function of more parameters. So I can have more of these ones. Doesn't make any difference. I can have here an arbitrarily complex computation. And it's things just map nicely. The computation goes here, and these things get into this big chip thing. Okay? So, what I can express simplest thing that I can think of possible to do with applicable functions. This is a different computation. So it needs to extract the result from the get line. To make this put str lnx, it needs to know the result of the get line. So this thing depends on the first part. Similarly, if I have kind of recursive, do stuff until, And again, this is not expressing, you can't express this using amplitude, because this action, this would turn into something like you would have to write something like this. And the problem here, this thing, the other part of the chip pair, it's conditional. You don't know when to execute it. The X, it's no longer in scope. You have to extract from there. Impossible to write. So the crucial difference, you have a sequence of instructions that are basically linear. None of these instructions depends on the previous ones. Then I have an applicative structure. If there is interdependency, like here, then I have a monadic structure. That's the difference. Clear enough. So, what then is a monad? Let's bang this problem in the head until we discover a monad. So, instead, remember how we found out the real applicative instance? So, I have this this structure. I pick up some random, and then I do something with it. Let's actually, I can demonstrate this using a for loop also. So let's imagine how we might try to write this if we didn't know enough Haskell types in what we could have been writing. So So we could write something here. So we have this argument here. This is the actual result of the dipole. This is a number, this is an int. And here we could write if the roll result is 6, and then we have to do some verification. Okay, let's forget about summing the results for now, just to make a simpler example. Basically, this thing here, this is a normal ordinary int. I can make this if condition. I don't have to run the generator or anything. Then I can use the result here in the if. Then if I use pure instead of return, keep things clean. Then if I have just no. My first roll is 6, then I return the 6, and that's it. Otherwise, I do something like this. And this completes my entire program. If I roll 6, I return the value 6. If I roll something else, 6, I roll number something like get a 6, and add my roll result to that number. So you're playing around with the run-of-the-mill recursion. And then this is my computation. Everything looks very nice. I have actual int here. And then I get this thing. And it seems quite close. And here we have a curious thing. I have this thing. And I'm claiming that I can use this thing. I have to just somehow modify the random result. And I have this hole. It says that this fmath expression here, it's random, produces another random, it's nested randoms, random int, and it produces a random int. Okay, so kind of confusing, yes, but let's assume that it's durable and try to implement that. Usually, function like that is called a join. Join it's a funny function like that. And I suppose I can implement this. And I didn't have pure because I had this chip. Let's actually make a proper applicative instance for this random, so I can use it in my example without excessive requirements. So should have done this early enough, but actually be at this point. know it's a, now it is a robot function. And now I can start implementing this join. So I have nested parameters. And this is again one of those bits of code. This is kind of hard to write, but turns out that you can only write one sensible definition. This is not something that you have to think. It's not a program that you design. It's a puzzle pieces. You have pieces of puzzle and then you fit the pieces together and get a working program. So you don't have to think about the whole big picture. And how do I do this? Let's pick up the this definition of random here. And just use that definition. Write the low-level code that we don't want to write in hopes that we can reuse it. Pop open to random gets me a function from the C value into something else. Then on this other side, I have to make a random int. Okay, let's build a random int from the format. Random is the type constructor that allows me to make random ints. So that's what I'm going to use. So it needs a f, some function. Let's call it alpha. Nested where statements is bit funny, but you can do that. So I have now slowly mechanically entered this point. At this part, well, let's add a type annotation. Always add type annotations when you're programming things like this. Makes life so much easier. And what is this? It's the Now I get the proper code. And what do I have? I have plenty of stuff. I have the seed value. Then I have this, this random thing here. Then, yeah, that's the only thing actually that I want. So I want this random in from inside these two randoms. And now I'm building the random in, so I want just that part. And now it's currently inside this function. I have to call this function to extract this random in. So yeah, let's do that. And what does my function give me? The int I want and the new c value. And then put another hole there, see what it's now requiring from me. Yeah, now it seems I'm almost done. So the hole, it's just, it's an int and the C value. Yeah, okay. Sorry. Took one step too much. So, the int. I was not confused. Sorry about that. Will happen to you also. Don't worry about that. The int. It's not the int. At this point, we executed this first random. It gave me the second random. Now we have this random int, not the int. This is just fitting puzzle pieces together. It's scary and nasty and all things like this, but it's very small steps. Just take all the steps and get there. Okay, I have random int. I have two seeds. And I have to get, what do I have to get? An int and a word value. Well, let's pop out. another kind of function from there. And then what do? I have this, the second column. Let's execute it and it shows me what that is. It's another word that we use in Web32. It seems I'm finally getting closer to the solution of this puzzle. I have this function that returns exactly what I want. Then I have to call it. And to call it, I need a word 32. I have two at my disposal. Well, obviously, I had once used this random number generator seed. I used this to extract the first layer, so I'm going to use the second one. And boom, I'm done. Scary bit, right? Really scary. All kinds of mess that start from here and there. And but then, let's where do I have this original definition? See. It's a bit like applicable, right? This was probably easier to understand, I guess. Equivalently difficult to write. This, yeah. The same thing here. It's first, steps one around generator, one step ahead, picks up the seed, then steps another random number generator, one step ahead, and picks up the result and the new seed. Except this one does them, nest one inside the other, and this thing does them in parallel one beside the other. So I have this join function. Now I can write this nasty, horribly difficult role until you get a six program that would have taken you something like 18 seconds to write in Java, I guess. Now I can do this in Haskell. Okay. Any questions about this thing? Still, I think it merits some improvement. So let's write more code and see if we can abstract more parts out of that. To keep things in mind, this is looks horribly difficult. It will be more clear in a while. But there are two parts. There is this part where you just pick up a pattern. The pattern is again join something that you get with F mapping something. And you build up a nested structure, random inside another random. Then you have this join, which you write in a rote mechanical way. You just put holes and fill the holes until your code compiles, and that's it. And then you can write condition programs that depend on previous steps of the computation. Then you can get access to programs that do stuff like this at this point. And now I think we need a 10-minute break, and then do the second problem. And you can spend a 10-minute break either picking up oxygen, which might help think, or by meditating first. Those are the only two reasonable options. Facebook is not a reasonable option at this time. Okay, back to English and actual topic. So you can probably abandon this abandon too much. So we have this horrible monstrosity. So we can make this bit cleaner. So see what this thing is all about. So first, I think we can declare that this join is very useful. If we have another example, we are running out of time, so I'll make a web example about this compute and we go with the randoms only. So this thing, what is a monad? Now we have seen our first monad. This is not the interesting part. This is bookkeeping and boilerplate. So don't think about this. This is the non-essential part. The essential part is this idea. It's the type. We have two nested functors, and we have a way of flattening these functors. That is a model. So we can make a type class. And this is again my own type class. It's not the standard, but for our definition first now. So all monads are applicatives. Usually monads are defined like they often have this return A to FA, which is exactly the same as 0. But since I put this applicative constraint here, well, I can use pure with these also, so it's not necessary. And the whole point, we have function join, takes f of fa's, and returns fa. And very simple, very nice. You can contrast this with it's kind of like the same thing. And now we have this type class. We can make the random our instance of this type class. And abstract over the join. And let's drop the join from here. Don't need that anymore. And one extremely nice language feature in GHC. We have this extension instance 6, which, let's turn it on. Allows me to write type signatures for instance methods. Very nice. And let's give it maybe almost enough. So remove the type declaration so I don't need to go and add one for all there again. So here's a join. And when you take it out of context, it's no longer, it's not that bad. It is. We have a huge hassle writing this thing. So it's really scary. And what we got is two relatively simple ones if we take it away from the actual application. And then our actual application. I mean, it's not very, tidy, really, it's not very tidy, but, it's kind of, understandable already. So, normally I would show you another example. The example would end up having join F map something complex. I would have the same structure. And now I'm running out of time, like always, so I'm going to skip the other example. And we are going to extract one more pattern from this. So it turns out when you start using monads, using the join and F map, you always get something. You take some value, you F map the result of the value with some function that returns you another monad. Basically, it returns you another monad. Here, roll until you get 6. This is a recursive call of this. It has like random. You fmap this die roll with this function that returns a random int. You get random int. Okay, this might be a point of confusion. Is everyone clear with the fact why you get random int? Why do you get this? This as a type of fmap. Is it? Because here, this expression here, that's a random input. And I have, the fmap is generally AB, FA, FB. Okay, now F is random. Okay, A is int, since by, yeah, that's my random int. So this function time fmap in it, it has to be, you know, int to B. And the B here, it's the, you know, this thing or this thing. And the type of that thing here, that's a random int. And now if I replace all the B's with the random int, I get this is the actual type of this. This is the type of that fmap there. So I get nested randoms. So that is why I get this double layer structure. And the double layer structure, it allows me to do fmaps. It allows me to work with this int here. It allows me to, you know, take this guy and write conditions based on that, or use this guy to generate totally another random action. You know, I would take the int and do computations like if I roll 2 on a die, I then pick up a random card from the playing deck. If I roll 3, I roll the die again. So I can choose the continuation of how this thing is going to play out based on the value inside the random. So that's why I get random. Any questions at this point? Okay. Then, what we are going to do, we are going to study this weird thing, which is basically what is actually this general pattern. I say that this thing here, it's always going to be some kind of a generalizable thing. So this is, we are always working with things when we go like this. Let's make a type error, so we can see what it's all about. Very, very nice way to figure out what the types of Haskell expressions are is to claim that they are ints and let the compiler complain. Okay, so what we have? I have a1 to f0, a0, f. Okay, let's use nicer terms. So we have F0 and B for A0. Then we have F of A1, which is A, and we get FB. Stop complaining. It's incorrect, and you use the compiler manual. So, I have this kind of a function. It's, this is something that I will use every time. All the time I will get this. And it's as this cousin. If I just flip the parameters around, I get a thing like this. Okay, this one. And this one, depending on if you want to read from left to right or right to left, the same thing. If you understand this type expression here, three terms, f of a, function from a to f of b, and f of b. If you understand what this means, you know what monads are. This is the essential part of understanding working with Haskell monads. This thing, usually, you know, it's written like usually has only two of these greater than signs, but since I don't want flash names, I get this. I have these operators, so I can write the value first. Let's try to actually use this. So I will replace the join fmap here with this weird thing. First, that's my action. Takes two arguments. Takes this strange function and then a die roll. Then let's do a manipulation. Okay, I just made turn the function into index operator. Should be parameters around, I can use that. So the die will be the first thing. And then I write the result of the die roll in this function. So this is a pipeline. First roll a die, then feed the result into this function, which gets to decide what we do next. And if some condition matches, we do something. If it doesn't match, we do something else. Then it's common to actually, format the code a bit differently. So basically, we usually do it like this. And since this is an operator, we can actually get rid of the parentheses as well. Okay, it starts to look nicer. Then what else can we do? We can go in and attack this fmap part, get rid of the fmap just to demonstrate how this thing is all the work. So we can reuse this operator here. Roll until you get a 6. That's a random combination of one of these moments again. And we can pipe this to another function. Which, returns. Pipeline to make things nicer. It's if I indent this far enough, it looks like a bit like Java code, kind of. So whole point about this operator is pipelines. Roll a die. Feed the result into this function. In this function, roll a die until you get a 6. Feed the result into this function. And this function just returns the sum of the two numbers. Okay, any difficulties with this? Clicking stop around, you get this. Quick question. If I put parentheses here, open parenthesis here, then where does the parenthesis end? Here or here? this parenthesis where do I put the closing parenthesis here or here if I want to parenthesize this statement? Hands up if you think it's A. Hand up if you think it's B. Yeah, and you are correct. So this thing scopes the whole next lambda statement. So this lambda ends here, ends when the expression ends. Okay, let's make a modification, just a random modification. Row 2 times. Two dice and then does something with that. Example program that would apply. So this allows us to fight the computation. Take a die, feed it the function, take a die, feed it the result in the function. Do this if statement, take a random computation with the result in the code. So, big pipeline. Nothing difficult about that. And then the final topic for this lecture is that this is actually what backs up the do notation. The do notation is used with I/O. It's basically this thing. This is just, basically manipulates the outer layer of the programming language, so rearranges things. So, completely mechanical. This is the same as what we had. So do notation, it just takes expressions like this and maps them into this operator and few lambdas in between. So this is exactly the same as what we had before. And this is how the I/O works. So do is for any monad, and I/O happens to be a monad, so you can sequence the effects in proper order. And that's why you can use do notation to write I/O programs. And I/O programs get turned into sequences of these pipeline operators called lines and lambdas. And that's how it ends up working. If this last transformation felt dangerous or difficult, go and do this exercise. This won't take you a very long time, since you have already done it once. Yeah, this working with operators. Read this section from the first course again. You had this short explanation here, and go on and convert this do notation into this operator. That is, of course, the same thing as I have here. Okay, now that's it for me. Any questions at this point? Okay, and if you are feeling scared, what are the important parts? The important part, this idea that if you want to choose the next step in your computation, you must use a monad. And you can do this fmap, and you get a nested monads. You get maybe int, or random int, or things like this. Then you have this join, which flattens structures. And the join, well, it's a scary thing, but you write it completely mechanically. So you have a type signature, and then you just figure out how to fulfill that type signature, and you're done. So these are complex looking, but they are actually very easy to write. Just just write them in any possible way that you can, and you usually are correct. Finally, you get, if you abstract this join and head map pattern, you get the bind. And the bind has this kind of a type. And if I read this type in English, I have a computation that returns an A. Then I have a function that takes an A and decides what to do next. And the part that says what to do next is a computation that returns A, B. Then I get a computation returning A, B. Many ways to think about this is a pipeline. It takes this A and feeds it to this function. You build up a pipeline. You can think of it as it's a thing that takes a computation and a function and returning another computation and, you know, combines them somehow. Probably not that useful viewpoint. Or you can just, you know, memorize this type and, you know, when you have more than just visualize the type and everything is clear. This is the whole idea. This also explains perfectly why this is different from applicatives. Applicatives, I could join to containers or whatever, but I always have to join the two. Here I can pass it a function telling me what to do next given the first step is like this. Or given the result of the first step, I can select the next step. Okay, any questions now? Did I manage to confuse you? And when you, you know, encounter the exercises, they will feel hard again. They will feel like, you know, you're bending an iron bar with their hands, and it's impossible to understand, and blah, blah, blah. Well, it's hard for the first time. The trick to get over the clutter is hard. Use type tools. Write type signatures. If you are stuck with a piece of code, pick up a pen and a paper and annotate all the types in the code. Just write out the types. The types are easy to understand. Never ever, you know, start, you know, thinking about what the join actually does. Because this is easy to write, but then if you pick up a die, you know, you have this thing. The big point about having this join edmap thing is to hide what the join is doing. Hide all the nasty bookkeeping. And now if you start to figure out what this thing does, and you bring to mind the implementation of the join, which was the nasty part that we tried to hide, which is the part that makes the code complex, then you are making your life hard. So just hide. This is a simple idea. No, buttons, two containers, and that's it. Don't have to think how it does that. It just does. And then, you know, the type size. So if there's no questions at this point, then, well, the supervised sessions are tomorrow, so bring your questions there.